win it here.
My name is Sandy Hickox, and I am an alcoholic. You know, this is Founders Day, for God's sakes. You know, how can you not, how can I not be grateful? You know, because my God. I sat in here last night, and I just could not, I mean, it was like a rock concert. You know, I just, all of us sober, you know. I mean, I was speechless. I still am. I can't describe the emotions I'm feeling. And this morning I come in here and I started crying right off the bat. And I don't, everybody's asking me what's wrong. I don't know. I mean, I'm sober. You know, that's, I'm not in the hell I used to be in, you know, and I'm here with you guys. And I'm fully clothed and in my right mind. That's not always been my case on a Sunday morning. I want to thank Jim for inviting me to talk. And, you know, I've heard a lot of things about Founders Day, and I couldn't even imagine it. And I still can't. You know, I missed the motorcycle parade this morning. We were over at Dr. Bob's doing a third step. You know, me and my husband. Before, you know, we tried to get in there yesterday, and we just couldn't even get in the house. You know, and everything in my head is always bigger than it is in reality. And I, you know, that house is real small, and just all the miracles that took place there. I want to thank Marie for being the just the best chauffeur for us. You know, thank you. The room is awesome. I mean, I've been in rooms with mirrors on the ceilings and, you know, quarter machines, but never a jacuzzi. And I think that's the warmest I've been all weekend was in that jacuzzi. I'm trying to get everything to just settle down where I'll quit shaking, and I don't know that that's going to happen this morning. I've been asked to share what happened to me, what I'm like, and, you know, what I'm like now, and that's what I'm going to attempt to do. You know, I didn't come to AA because I wanted to quit drinking or any of that kind of stuff. I didn't even come to AA. I got signed up for treatment, and I didn't even know what treatment was. I got in some trouble with work, and I was going to lose my job, and I was going to go to prison. And I wasn't happy about all that. And a guy come knocking on my door, well, one day, and, you know, this guy's weird. He had been off somewhere. I worked with him. I mean, we wasn't sure where he had been, but he come back talking in half sentences. You know, and he used to love to party. I mean, oh, it was great, you know. And then he went off to this place and then come back, and he wasn't any fun anymore. You know, we talked to him, you want to go with us? And he goes, no, I'm not drinking one day at a time. We say, okay, we'll just see you tomorrow, you know. You know, and he was talking about, you know, first things first, and but for the grace of God, you know, just half sentences, and they didn't make any sense, and we just left him alone because he was weird, you know. He used to be happening and together, But anyway, this guy's at my door, and I've been kind of avoiding him and stuff because, you know, he's just not drinking anymore, and I don't hang out with people that don't do what I do. And he's knocking on my door, and he said, you know what, I know how I can get you out of trouble. I said, sign me up. So he signed me up for treatment. I was not one of these people. I guess I lived under a rock. I wasn't one of these people that had seen the message late at night. You know, I wasn't one of these people that had been in and out of AA. I'd never heard of AA. I had heard of an alcoholic. My mom always called my daddy one, and she told me I was just like him, and that's what I knew about that. And this guy wanted to sign me up to treatment so I could get my job back, and I said, good, do that. Because I'm looking at going to jail because my sobriety date is November the 14th, 1983. My home group... My home group is the Chubbuck Sunday Night Meeting in Chubbuck, Idaho. It's a suburb of Pocatello. Not really. You know, I come to one day, and there's a banging on the door, and it's a cop car outside. And that wasn't strange in the neighborhood where I live, but they was always looking for the neighbor. So I opened up the door and tried to point to him, and they were wanting me. And they went through my house just like they do on TV. You know, I thought it was TV, but it's not. That was real. And they found what they were looking for. But I couldn't tell them that the pills that they found was what I took so I could go to, you know, stay awake drinking all night. You know, they had it with a possession with intent to distribute. I couldn't tell them that that reefer that they found was what I smoked to get me down when I was up all night working after I've been drinking all day on those pills. They had that with possession with intent to distribute. And the gun that they found to protect me from the hobos, is they had it with illegal possession of a firearm. And this was back before getting busted was fashionable, and I was going to prison. And I was scared. So they took me to jail, and I couldn't call him because she might be home, and I had to stay in jail 5 days. You know, when I think about that today, you know, it's like somebody else led that life. It, you know, it just don't even seem like it's me. You know, I'm such a whiny bag today. You know, and maybe that's what I need to see this morning, is that I'm not how I used to be. Because sometimes I judge myself so harshly on my thinking, I don't even look at my actions. You know, and I'm always coming up on the short end of the stick. There's a guy in this audience today, every time I see him, he just impresses me with what he does. And he's just got a place in my heart. You know, there's people in front of me that show me that I'm not doing enough for AA. And Wayne's one of them. And I'm just honor our friendship. And but anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. I got to go back to jail. If y'all have a problem with a crying woman, you need to leave now. Because it don't get no better than this. So this guy, he signed me up for treatment, and after he signed me up and stuff, these two old guys come to the house, and they're strangers to me. I don't know who they are, and they start telling me stuff they should take to their grave, you know, and I didn't know what they were doing. Today, I know they were trying to 12-step me, but I mean, back then, it was confession, and they should have kept it all quiet, you know. I said, well, I'm going to treatment on Monday. This is like, I mean, it was like a week later that I was signed up. You know, and they, you know, they said, well, we can get you in today. I said, oh, no, I got business to take care of. And I really did. I had to find somebody to pay my rent and, you know, make arrangements. You know how we are. And they left out the door shaking their head. And today I know why. Back then I didn't. You know, I mean, I'm really going to treatment. I want to get my job back. And I have no idea what's in front of me. I promise you that. Or I wouldn't have went back on Monday. And I talked to my landlord. I didn't want him getting rid of my place while I was gone. And, you know, this was one more time in my life where I had this, you know, I had my little script in front of me, and I'm going to play the part and get through it on the other side, and then I'm going to get on with the rest of my life, you know. Get over this little hump, this little incident, you know. And that's what I thought. Well, one of these old guys, him and his Al-Anon wife, well, he was in AA and his wife was in Al-Anon. They were the one that carried me to treatment. Now, I didn't know you could drink before you went to treatment. I mean, I went to treatment sober, my pants pressed. I wanted to make a good first impression. I didn't know, you know, I really didn't have a clue what was fixing to happen. And by the time we got down there, I had an idea and I knew I'd made a mistake. This Al-Anon lady kept telling me about, you know, I wasn't going for not drinking forever, you know, and that's what she was talking about. And I'm going, uh-oh, there's been a misunderstanding here, and I think it's on their part. So the AA goes in there and gets me signed up for treatment, and this Al-Anon's got me by the elbow, and she ain't going to let go because I'm looking like a scared rabbit about this point, you know. I mean, I'm getting white, and I'm shaky, and she escorts me in. Well, and we walk down a hall about long as this auditorium, and in the back of the room, there's these double doors, and she walks me down, and I go through it, and she don't. She pulls the door, and it goes clank. And that's not a big deal. I mean, but I just, there wasn't no door handles on my side, and there was a window, and I know I'm in trouble now. Because, I mean, the only time I've been like that is when I've been in jail, and that's been many times, and I know about all that. You ain't getting out. So, I mean... I put my face up on that window and I go to crying, kind of like I am now. And, you know, and I don't cry pretty. I blow snot everywhere and my cheeks get red and my face gets all puffy. I mean, it just, I don't even know why I waste time with makeup in the morning before I talk. I always cry it all off. But, you know, I'm shaking and I'm scared. And this woman, I know if she ever looks back, she's going to feel sorry for me and come back and get me. You know that heifer went the whole length of that thing and never did turn back? I hated Al-Anon. So I'm in treatment, and they start talking to me, and there's this one lady, she come in my room one day, and she said, honey, she says, you don't ever have to feel the way you feel inside ever again unless you choose to. And she left me with that. You know, and I had been feeling like crap inside all my life. You know, I remember early in my childhood wishing I was somewhere else, in somebody else's body, in somebody else's house, and I knew that I would be all right if I was just that way. And this lady told me I never had to feel that way again. And I remember, you know, I mean, I think I come out of the chute 6 foot tall, which is really nice at 50, but when you're 10 and 12, it sucks. You know, you got people calling you names and picking on you and all that kind of stuff, and I just hated it. I hated school. I hated everything about it because all I had was feet and legs. You know, I didn't have the other weight women had. And when I took that first drink, it gave me about 40 pounds. It put 10 here, 10 here, and 20 back here. And I loved it. You know, I knew instantly that I was different when I took a drink, and I always looked for that because it made my insides and my outsides match. And it made me feel like you looked. And I just never was there. You know, and she told me that I didn't have to feel that way ever again on the inside unless I chose to. I didn't believe her, you know, because I come up in the South. I mean, I've been to church and I've been sprinkled and dipped and dunked and all that kind of stuff, trying to get what you had. You know, trying to get that peace of mind that I see in your face. And it just don't work for me. So I know that I've done crossed that whatever line it is that you cross where you're not ever going to be forgiven and you're burning in hell the rest of your life. I know I'm there. And then they, in this treatment center, they start talking about God. So I know I don't have a shot. But, you know, then they told me that I could have a God of my understanding. Power of my own choice. I could have anything I wanted. It didn't matter. I tried men before and they didn't work. So I had to get something different than that. And I've had to prove that to myself more than once, unfortunately. But so I'm in treatment, and they say all you got to do is do what we ask you to do. So I started doing that. I started taking the inventory, and I found out that the reason I was an alcoholic, and that was not because my dad left my mom when she was pregnant with my youngest brother. I found out that the reason I'm an alcoholic is not because my mama worked in a cotton mill and raised four kids by herself, and we were poor. I found out that I'm an alcohol not because of my mama. I found out that I wasn't an alcoholic because of all the men. I found out that I wasn't an alcoholic because of my perfect brother, even though he drove me to drink many times. He was my excuse for drinking many a time. You know, and I found out that I'm an alcoholic because inside of me I am different. And when alcohol hits that hole, I'm filled. And that's what I want all my life. Today I know it's a God hole. You know, and I've put so many other things in that, trying to fill it, and nothing has worked, except trying to develop a relationship with a God of my understanding. But anyway, I do that inventory, and I find out that, you know, the reason I'm alcoholic and the reason I'm so scared is not because of this guy. You know, I live with a man, and we used to get drunk and fight. Oh, my God. You know, and I'd wake up in the morning and find out I lost, you know. And that was, to me, a good time. Because my mama had kicked me out. Well, let me clear this. I used to say my mama kicked me out when I was 13. But what she told me was I could not drink under her roof. She kicked me out, you know. So I had been living, you know, I used to say I was living on my own, but that's not true. You know, I mooched off people and people's sympathies and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, and I changed my driver's license to say that my birth certificate, so I'd say I was a year older than what I was, so I could get driver's license and all that kind of stuff. You know, and in that treatment center, they told me I didn't have to do those things anymore. They told me I wasn't an alcoholic because my oldest brother found me in the streets of New Orleans selling myself. That's not the reason I'm an alcoholic. That's the result of my alcoholism, and I didn't know that, you know. I didn't know that. So I started doing what they asked me to do. I did that inventory and looked at my part. You know, my perfect brother, I was jealous of him because he was okay in his skin. You know, back then I thought it was just because he was stingy and had a lot of money. But that's not true. He was okay who he was. He had a God of his understanding. He was proud that he was 6'9", you know. I mean, he was just okay. And I envied that so much because I was so not okay. And that's the reason I hated him. I mean, I got him under the house when we was little and tried to kill him. You know, get rid of him and my problems will be over. You know, not. But I thought so at that time. And I found out that that my mother, she had to save her own sanity by asking me to leave. You know, she was laying that wake wondering whether I was dead or alive, and she just couldn't take that pain. And she was not Al-Anon. She was just strong in her own beliefs, you know. And she just couldn't take the torture I was putting her through. And that's the reason she asked me to leave. I found out in that treatment center that they wanted me to go to a halfway house after I got through all of this. You know, and I was scared about that because, you know, the treatment center they wanted to put, I mean, the halfway house they wanted to put me in had women in it. You know, all my life I've come up around a big pack of boys. You can't chase me nowhere with a bug. I can make a Coca-Cola dance with a pistol, you know. But as far as putting foo-foo stuff on and how to do your hair and all that crap, I don't have a clue. But, I mean, I know I can bait my own hook. I can, you know, Wendell, shut your ears. I can clean my own fish. You know, I know how to do all of that. You know, I can skin a rabbit, all that. But that girl stuff I didn't know how to do, and I was really scared about being around these women. And when they put me in that halfway house, what I come to understand is that the reason I was scared of women or didn't like women is I thought they were like me. And if they were like me, they were not to be trusted. You know, because if it wasn't tied down or in your purse, I had it. And I didn't, you know, I'm not proud of that, but that's just who I was. You know, I had no idea. I was just a taker. Just a taker. And I didn't care if I had to step on you to get it. You know, and today I know that all that I did was trying to make me feel better about me inside. And I didn't realize that all those actions I was taking was what making me feel so bad about me on the inside. Y'all have shown me that. Stayed in the halfway house until they said I could leave, and then I was scared. Because I just knew that all my friends were going to come down there and get me drunk. You know, these are the friends that didn't bring me cigarettes when I was in jail or visit. These are the ones that hadn't written while I was in treatment. You know, but I was scared about these people going to come take and get me drunk. And this Al-Anon and this AA, I'd done forgiven her by now, and I'd asked her to be my sponsor. You know, because in the little town where I got sober in Georgia, there wasn't a lot of women in the room staying sober. You know, there was a lot of old guys, and they had their wives, and this Al-Anon lady started out sponsoring me. And I'm forever grateful that she said yes to me. You know, because some of us just don't have the women examples, you know, like you do in the larger cities. You know, and I'm glad I really didn't listen to men work with men and women work with women. Because I would have just been out in the cold. You know, because there was just not any women staying sober. And this Al-Anon lady made me her project, and I am forever grateful. You know, because she come and she got me, and she showed me what women did in the daytime because I didn't know. You know, she showed me how to match up my clothes. She showed me how to shop. She taught me about cooking and about, you know, canning and growing stuff. I mean, her thing was a garden, so every day we were out in the garden. Because, see, I'm not working yet. I got time on my hands, and that's not good for me. This guy that I called when I was in jail because I had to get somebody to call him because she might be home, was a guy that had a lot of money. You know, and at that phase of my development, there was always one back. You might not see me with him, but there was always one of those there. And it was somebody that I could call on when I needed cash. And I'm in a lot of trouble, you know, at this phase of my development, and I am so scared to let this money man go because I don't have a job. You know, I'm looking to go to prison unless I can afford a good lawyer. I can't. He can, you know. And while I was in treatment, they said, Sandy, you're going to have to make a decision. You're going to have to do it your way or you're going to have to do it God's way. And as long as you're depending on a man and money, you're not going to get very far on depending on a God. Now, I'm in a dilemma. Got to trust something I can't see, feel, or touch. Or this money man, and he's sending me money while I'm in treatment. $100 bills in the envelope every week like clockwork. Now, I like money, you know, but I just know that I made it my higher power. And, you know, I had to make a decision. And I'm going to tell you that, you know, it seems like we all come to decisions that's the hardest one I ever had to make at that phase of my development. You know what I mean? Well, this was the hardest one I had to ever make at this phase of my development because I had to decide to let that money man go. Why? It was either this. Either I keep selling myself or I do the AA way. Choice was mine. You know, and they let me make that. And I wrote him a letter and said, you know what? Don't send me no more money. You know, I'm going to do this sober thing, and I can't do it with you because you're married, and I just don't want to do that. You know, I told him goodbye. And that started my trust in a God that I didn't have a clue about. And, It seems to me, and it has been my experience, that the things that I fear the most when I trust God and walk through them, I really am okay on the other side. I get what I think. You know, all my life I went after things that I thought would make me okay. You know, chasing whatever I think it is. And in AA, you asked me to don't do that. Trust God, you know, and I just know God don't know what's going to make me happy. So, but you know, that was like the very first big attempt that I made at trying to discover that relationship. And I'm going to tell you, everything worked out fine with me in that. You know, I got to go home. This Al-Anon lady was talking to me, and I got a phone call about wanting to do doing the court thing. And I'm scared to death, you know, because I know I'm going to jail. But at this phase of my development, I know that jail is a result of my actions. And I'm willing, for the first time in my life, I'm willing to pay that price, because that's what you tell me. To be able to hold my head up high in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to be able to be willing to play to do the consequences of my actions. And at this time, I'm ready to do that. If it means go to jail, I'll go to jail. So I got the lawyer wanted me to wear a skirt, and I hadn't had a skirt on in years. But down south, you always got a dress you go to funerals in, you know. And it's back in the back of my closet. I got it at a Salvation Army. It didn't have any tags in it. It's got this zipper in it. Well, I don't know what you do with a zipper in a skirt. Does it go in the front, the back, or the side? So I call my Al-Anon lady, because she is Martha Stewart in disguise, right? So I call her, and she's not home. But I get her husband on the phone. He said, "Oh, hell, Sandy, just put the zipper in the front like we do and just go on." I put that zipper in the front, and I went to court. I can only imagine what I look like in front of that judge. Oh, Lord. And you know what? After a lot of legal gibberish that I still don't understand to this day, I come out and I had first offender's probation, and I didn't have to go to prison. That was another example of me trusting God. Because, you see, I just knew that if I didn't have Money Man and him dishing out all that money to get me a really good lawyer, you know, I was in trouble, you know. And God didn't want me in jail, and I didn't go. You know, and I got a probation officer, and, you know, he saw me get sober. And, you know, when he had women that had trouble drinking and everything, he would call me, you know, to come talk to him. And I would do that, you know. And that's the result of what this program has taught me. There was this old guy in the meetings, and, oh, my God, I hated him. You know, he's one of those old-timers that just would tell you the truth and didn't care whether you liked it or not. And because of all my other things that I had done in treatment, they labeled me an alcoholic and an addict. And I went to the meetings, and that's what I said I was. You know, and I'm doing what I'm told. And this old guy, he would sit back in the back of the room and scream about his hemorrhoids. I didn't make the connection. I didn't understand. He was just crazy. You know, he's one of those old people that had drank too much, got that wet brain crap going on, and he just picks on newcomers. That's his sense of entertainment, you know. And I just happened to be the one in the bowl. But every time I say that, he'd scream about his hemorrhoids, and it pissed me off. I tell you what, that man taught me about principles before personalities. Because he wasn't going to take my chair, you know. And he taught me about prayer, too. Because I would pray that SOB died on the way to the meeting. They had to drive. Him and his wife had to drive like 30 minutes every week to the meeting. So I always prayed they have a wreck, because he aggravated me so bad. Now, y'all didn't tell me. Well, y'all just said pray for him, and I did. We'd have our birthday meeting. There'd be about 15 of us, and I'm up chairing the meeting, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and he's still screaming about his hemorrhoids. And he didn't care that we had company at the meeting that night. He didn't care who was there. You know, finally, I asked somebody, "Why is he always picking on me like that? I hate that son of a bitch." You know? And somebody said, "Sandy, come here, let me tell you." And this guy pulled me aside, and he said, "You know, this is Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, "Yeah, I know that." He said, "You know, if you come in the meetings and you say you're anything but an alcoholic, you're saying you're different from us. And if you're different from us, what we do here may not work for you, and you may die." Why don't you take some time getting Bill's story and see if you can identify with how he felt identifying with what drinking did to him. Has it ever happened to you? Did you ever go to the bar and just have two? I go, no, what was the point? He said, exactly. So I don't know what his point is because I'm still not getting it, you know. So I go home and I read that stupid story and, you know, and I can identify with Bill. I mean, not what he did or nothing like that. But I remember feeling when I got my job on the railroad, I knew that I had arrived. Because I knew if I was making enough money on my own, I would be all right. And I knew that feeling. I could identify with him when he was talking about his drinking got bad. And then his friends, he says it in big words. I can't quote it. Ain't going to try. But he, you know, people start talking to him about his drinking. So he quits hanging out with them, right? Well, I have went through many, many people like that. They wouldn't even hang out with me because I'm just crazy when I'm drinking. You know, I have done that. I can identify with him when he talks about wanting to commit suicide but not having enough courage. I always wanted to wake up dead. I hated living, you know, but I wasn't going to blow my face off. Nuh-uh. I was scared. And I remember those four horsemen. I think it talks about it somewhere else in that book, that you wake up and you got that knot in your stomach and you don't know who he is or where you got him, and my God, he's uglier than the last one, and you went, you know, this was not my idea of what was going to happen to me. And I don't mean to take any, I don't mean that quite like it is, but that's just how I see it, okay? Sometimes you just have to shut up. Because trying to get out of it, it just gets worse. But, you know, so I could, I know about those feelings, about the loneliness, and about that self-pity and that self-loathing. You know, I know all that. And I know when I got in those kind of things, I'd go back to the bar and drink again and everything would be all right. Because that's what Bill talks about he did after that, after the stock market crash. He wasn't going to jump. He went back to the bar and got a new idea. Well, I went back to the bar and got a new, well, sometimes it was a new idea. Sometimes it was him again. I don't know, you know. But I could identify with Bill and how he felt. And I know that when I take a drink, it changes me. And I have been sober long enough to where I see people, they take a drink and they start to feel it and they put it down. That's the reason you drink, to feel it. You know, I don't understand that. Okay, that is normal drinking. I don't know nothing about that. I take a drink and I wait for the boom and the magic to happen and me be different, a new person, and I'm out of here. That's what drinking does to me. Well, that's the reason I'm here with you. It's because it does that to me. So I identified myself as an alcoholic because I'm restless, irritable, and discontented unless I can, you know, the sense of ease and comfort comes at once with a few drinks. You know, that's me, sober. I'm waiting for the next drink so I can get that sense of ease and comfort. So I go back to the meeting and I'm laying in the gap waiting on that old fart, you know. My name's Sandy and I'm an alcoholic and I just listen. I got the power to cure hemorrhoids. That old guy told me one time, he said, honey, I want you sober. I don't want it in your pants. And I was offended. I was. It made me so mad. You know, because after all, I'm sober. I'm having them cleaned up, you know, and I'm looking good in my head. And, you know, and why wouldn't he not want me, right? I didn't get it. And you know what? That old man didn't laugh at me because I didn't get it. You know, because he knew that when we come here, there's nothing. We don't think we're nothing, you know. I was a lay in the hay and that was all. And see, and he saw more. And I had never had anybody see more before, you know. And he was the first one. And I tell you what, as much as he pissed me off and as much as he told me the truth every meeting, I was right up under him like I just attacked, just like a magnet, you know. And I'd cuss him every night on the way home. But he loved me enough to tell me the truth, and I knew that. I knew that he wanted more for me than what I ever wanted for myself or could ever dream of. You know, and that's what some of y'all do for us newcomers when we come in here, is y'all give us that hope and y'all give us that love, and you don't take advantage of us because you've been there, you know. And that's not just limited to the women. I've seen women, you know, take advantage of newcomer guys and all that kind of stuff too. So, you know, I just, for me, it's really important to know why I'm here. And I hope I always remember to do that. This time, in a little small town, you know, to go to a meeting every day, you got to get in the car and drive. You got to drive 30 minutes, 45 minutes, sometimes an hour to get to a meeting. And whoever's got the biggest, that's who's driving, because we can pack all the drunks in, and here we go. And we had the meeting on the way to the meeting, we had the meeting on the way home, and then we had the meeting there, and we had the meeting on the way home. And then when we get home, we put on a cup of coffee and talk about God the rest of the night. And then if we're lucky to have a job, we go to sleep 2 hours, get up and go to work and do it all over again. That's AA. Me and this guy, he started talking to me about God and explaining to me about God and explaining all the big words in the big book and all that kind of stuff. And we just started liking each other. And then we got to go on an AA date. Woohoo. Newcomers, let me tell you about my AA date. He come pick me up. I didn't go get him. He come to my house, pick me up. We either went to dinner before or after the meeting, went to the meeting, he took me home, and he left. What was the point of an AA date? Get at the steps of the night, you don't know whether to kiss him or say the Lord's Prayer. I'm telling you, I didn't see the point. So I'm in the garden with this Al-Anon lady, and I'm pissed off because this guy's not grabbing nothing. He's not touching nothing. He's not trying to kiss nothing, and I think he's gay. You know? I don't know what's wrong with me. So I'm slinging dirt, and I'm digging potatoes with this Al-Anon lady, and I'm asking her about it. And, I mean, I'm mad, you know, because I done picked up a little weight, and I'm looking good, got some new clothes on. I mean, I'm doing the AA deal. And I'm getting good for the Thursday night meeting, but I don't understand why he's not wanting anything from me. So I'm slinging dirt asking this Al-Anon lady, and she said, well, honey, he may be just showing you respect. Respect? What the hell is that? That's when he goes with you one night and comes back the next day. That's what I knew about respect. I bet you she about busted a gut that day. Now, she never laughed at me and never let me see it, but I guarantee you after I left, she probably fell on the floor laughing. But one more time, that's what y'all do for me here. When I don't know and I come to you, as goofy as it sounds, you don't laugh at me. Now, as soon as I'm out the door, I know I do with some of the girls I sponsor. Oh, my God. It's hard to keep a straight face sometimes, but I do. But as soon as they leave, I'm just in the floor laughing. Some of the, you know, the good ideas they come up with. Oh, my hell. You know, or the new idea they think they have invented. That's even better. So me and this guy start, we're doing the AA dating thing, and then he puts an engagement ring on my hand. And I'm going to tell you, I've never been so surprised or so shocked in my life. Because, you know, when I was out there drinking and drugging, I knew I wasn't the wife type. I was that other woman. You know, and since I come into AA and got cleaned up and stuff, you know, this man wants to marry me. And he knew about me. He knew about my past. And he still wanted to marry me. And I just couldn't even imagine it. You know, because he knew it was more. You know, and we had that AA wedding. And the Al-Anon ladies, they got together in our neck of the woods. And because we didn't have any money, you know, and they put on our wedding. You know, they done all the cooking and they done all the decorating and they done all the baking for it. You know, and I was impressed and the church was full. You know, that's what y'all gave me. You know, that's what y'all gave me. Well, we walked off in the sunset and burned up. I know today, that marriage lasted about 5 years, but I know today a couple of things. I know that guy taught me more about AA and God and big words and all that kind of stuff than anybody in my life up to that point, because he was a smart man. But I also know that I was trying to make his God my God, and I wasn't honest. And I got the results of that, and that marriage lasted about 5 years. We'd get in the meetings, and we'd hold hands, we'd get to the meeting, and we'd grab each other's hands, you know. I mean, you're almost like fighting with your hands, but you're smiling because you're the AA couple now. And you go in the meeting, right? And you make this, that's what I did. And we went in the meeting like everything was okay, and as soon as that meeting was over, we snatched him hands down and went to his side, and I went to my side, and we didn't speak no more, you know. And that's happily ever after in our house. And it just wasn't working. And I'm at a conference, and I meet this guy, and I wind up going to bed with him. And I come home and I ask for a divorce. And at this phase of my development, you know, I'm kind of like Tarzan going through the trees. I can't let go of one vine unless I got a firm grip on another one. And I had a firm grip. And today I know that I didn't have enough, I didn't have enough courage. I wasn't honest to ask for a divorce. And, you know, it just took another man to get me out of that relationship. And I'm not saying that I'm proud that that happened. I'm saying I'm grateful I had that experience. Because after that, I mean, the rooms of AA divided. There was his side and my side, and there was fights every meeting. And, I mean, it just got to be, it got to be bad. There wasn't any principles before personalities at that place, I'm going to tell you. It was all personalities, and it was mine, and I was the whore, and they hated me for it. And I'm supposed to be in AA where everybody's kind and loving. Not. I'm grateful that happened. For a couple of reasons. I'm grateful that happened because today, when if I'm sponsoring you and you get a divorce from your husband, buddy, don't talk to me. I mean, you can talk to me about him, but don't expect me not to like him. Don't expect me to take that side, because this is Alcoholics Anonymous and we have a single purpose here. I am not saying that that's easy to do. I'm saying that we got to remember our life depends on whether we can come in these rooms or not. And I'm going to tell you, if you got people calling you a whore, you ain't coming back. And I started going to Narcotics Anonymous meetings because they didn't know who I was and they didn't take sides and they just let me be in a recovery program. And I'm grateful those meetings were available to me. Because I'm in a little small town. I don't have 50 million meetings every day. I got one in my hometown. And we've been so busy and so active that everybody knew and everybody had their opinion and everybody was willing to share, you know, whether I ask them or not. And I don't ever want to forget that, because I don't want anybody to have to take that walk. It made me stronger. I'll tell you what, I was about 5 years sober and I wasn't thinking about taking a drink, but I was certainly thinking about eating a gun, because AA was not a place for me. And this old guy, the one I had healed, he had, because of some of my actions and stuff like that, you know, our relationship wasn't very close. Well, the actions I took, you give me 5 minutes and I would cuss him up one side and down the other. And I'd take his inventory and I'd tell you how sorry he was and all that kind of stuff. And that's what I did. And that day I'm sitting there with that pistol and I'm wanting to kill myself. He's the only man that I can think of that I can call. And I pick up the phone and I dial his number and he says, "Honey, you don't sound so good." I said, "I'm not." He said, "Come on over." He didn't say to me, "What you calling me for after all you said about me?" He didn't say that. He said, "Honey, come on over." And when I got to his house, he was standing at the door and his arms was open. And I just fell in him, and that man saved my life that day. That is principles before personalities, you know. And I've had an opportunity to make amends to him, and I make it my business to call him every week and check on him, because he's old now, you know. But that man, you know, he always talked louder than my head. You know, today I can hear him in my head, you know, and I'm grateful for that, you know, because he loved me enough. He was a taper down in the Southeast, and he and his wife put me in their back pocket and let me go with them. You know, and it absolutely saved my life. Because I'd go to conferences like this, he'd be taping, and I'd hear people talk about getting divorced in meetings and how they act on principles to get through that. And I would hear about people, you know, having affairs in AA. I know y'all don't think it happens up here. Probably don't. But down where I come from, it did. And I was a participant in that. And, you know, and I heard them talk about how they cleaned up the wreckage of that past. They were sharing their experience with me. And I started acting different, and that man absolutely saved my life. You know, when I was in Dr. Bob's house, I was looking at all the old-timers and the people that's come before us and how much they loved us. You know, they loved us enough to tell us the truth. They loved us enough to care about our sobriety and didn't care if they hurt our one little feeling. You know, I see a lot of times in meetings, you know, everybody's scared about pissing off a newcomer. You know, that was not the case when I got sober. You know, they didn't care if they made me mad, because they knew that liquor would bring me back, because we're the last stop on the block. And I think I know I do a disservice when I do that. You know, I really do. And every time I share about that, it makes me more aware of my responsibility here. As a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am a guardian of traditions. I am a carrier of our message. Not what I think about it, the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's out of the literature. And I get divorced, and I'm rocking along pretty good. And, you know, at this phase of my development, I think if I had a couple of kids, I would be better. So I find a man that's got a couple and make them, you know, get married. That's what I do. And it didn't last long, but you know what I found out about that is, you know, I have a hard time with what's my part and what's your part. I try to do it all. I try to do everything for you. And some things you just need to do on your own. And that was my lesson in that. And because of the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, when that oldest boy graduated, there was me and my new husband on the field. There was his dad and his new wife on the field. There was his mother and her girlfriend on the field. And none of us were fighting. You know, that's the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I get divorced from that one. When I was out there, I didn't get married much. I got married one time through a bag of Quaaludes, but that's about what I remember of it. But got sober, boy, things changed for me. And I'm at a pumping gas, and this lady I know says, I know somebody you need to meet. I'm going, oh, shit. I don't need to meet no other guys. I know I don't know how to do relationships. I make a big mess of them. But then she said, he needs you. That hooked me in. He was having a hard time, you know. I am always willing to be of service for somebody having a hard time. So, this guy calls me, and I didn't give her my phone number. Now, he works for the telephone company, but I didn't know that. So he got my number, and he called me, and he come up, and I put a pot of coffee, and I know that if he's ugly or something like that, I'm out of there, and, you know, I'll just make amends later. I'm out of there. And he comes up, and we sit down, and we go to talking, and next time we either one of us looked up, it was 11 o'clock at night, and I had met a friend. And I'm so grateful for that friendship today because I needed a friend at that time. And he was just recently divorced, and I'm recently divorced, and we just started hanging out, being buddies, didn't want to eat dinner together, by ourselves. And I started really liking him, and then I knew I was in trouble because I fell in love with him. And I'm going to tell you that. At that point, you know, I knew that I had to take some different actions because I went to this old guy and I said, how come I keep picking these sick men? He said, Sandy, you know the only common denominator in all your relationships? I said, yeah, I pick real sick men. He goes, no, it's you. That won't make you happy. And I had to think about what he said because that's true. I'm a kicking, screaming 2-year-old. I want everything my way. I want it now, and I don't want to share nothing with nobody. And I don't want to give it. I don't want to do nothing for it. Now, you can't have a relationship long lasting in those terms. It hadn't worked with me up to that point, you know. And I knew that I had to do something different. So I told this guy. I said, you know what? I like you, but I need to do some work on me, and I don't know how long that'll take. And I done an inventory like I had never done before. And I looked at my part in these relationships. And I picked me apart. And I just knew that I didn't want the same stuff. So I listed my character defects. And I just told them, I thought they would be big and impressive. But I just gave them to you. And they're not. And I asked God to take me someplace different in that. And about a month into that, I woke up and I knew that I knew. I knew that I could be different. I knew that I wanted to be different. And I just wanted God to take me where He wanted me to be. And the guy called me that very same day. He said, I need to talk to you. I said, yeah, I need to talk to you too. And he come up and we did some talking. And next month we'll be married 12 years. The brother that disowned me down the streets of New Orleans, you know, when I done an inventory, I found out that I'd done a lot to hurt him. And when I made my amends to him, I'd put him in God's spot in my life is what I'd done. And when I made my amends to him, you know, he I told him that I wanted a different relationship and that I wasn't going to be the person I'd always been to him. And I walked away from there free. And I was living with a guy, and we used to fight on a regular basis, and I was scared of him. And I went to him, and I made an appointment to make those. And it was in a public place, because the last time he saw me, he told me he was going to kill me if he ever saw me, and I knew that he meant it. And I made amends to him, and I walked away from there free. My mother, I made amends to her, too. You know, I don't know how many nights she sat there and didn't know where I was or what I was doing or whether I was dead or alive, because I wasn't kind and loving, didn't care whether she knew where I was at or not. And I went to her house one day, and I'd been beat up, and I looked like I'd been run through on the pavement, you know, and I can't imagine what she thought when she opened the door. And I made amends to her. And she, when I made my amends to her, she said, "Honey, all I ever wanted for you was to be happy." And, you know, I started calling that lady every week, and all she ever heard from me was happy. You know, she didn't, you know, that's all she wanted from me, so that's what I was giving her. The brother that was so smart and that I hated so much, you know, I found out through inventories that I was jealous of him. And I went to him, and I made some amends, and, you know, we just have a good relationship today. And I'm grateful for that. Me and Wendell, I got to tell you a little story about Wendell. Him up here reading today, he had a stroke about a year and a half ago. And I think he's read out loud like 4 times, and today we made like the 5th time. So thank y'all for that opportunity. God's been so good to us. We got married, and I told him AA's first. And I don't think any one of us understood the depth of that little comment, you know. Because he sat by himself a lot of times, and when I sponsored girls, when I would go to meetings, you know, and this was before he came an alcoholic. And, you know, we walked through that too. I had a lady, a lady was my sponsor in California, and she told me to tell him to take the test in the big book. He did, and he passed or failed, depending on how you point a reference. And he's been here 8 years, and I'm grateful for his sobriety too. You know, I'm real spiritual as long as I got money in my pocket. And Wendell got laid off and the money stopped. And I'm going to tell you, it wasn't easy. You know, and I talked to my sponsor and she showed me some things to do. I had to start asking newcomers for rides. And I'm always the one with a nice car giving the rides, right? Well, and I'm good with that. I'm real good with that. But I'm going to tell you, it's different when you have to ask and when you have to let people help you. And my sponsor told me that there is a lesson to be learned in receiving as well as in giving. And we walked through that. And Wendell come home one day, and his arms was all messed up from work. And he said, if I do a resume, will you put it on that monster.com thing? I said, absolutely. Well, we did. And he got a job offer in Idaho. Iowa, Idaho, where are we going? I didn't know. And we packed up and we moved to Idaho. And I'm going to tell you what is scary, moving. Because I'm at this phase of my development, I'm the old-timer in the meeting. I remember when you come in and y'all got married and she was born and, you know, you got sober and you come back and all that. I remember all that. And now I'm going to a new place, and I'd heard the tales. People go to those new places, they get pissed off and don't go to meetings, and they wind up drunk. And I didn't want that to happen to me. So Wendell goes on in front of me, and I had to, you know, sell the house and all that kind of stuff. And he gets me the numbers for 2 women in the meetings that he goes to. And he gives them to me. And I call these women. I say, okay, this is the date I'm going to be out there. And if you don't see me in a meeting in a week, you come get me, because I will not have sense enough to get there by myself. Because you know how we are in our head. Oh, my gosh, it's horrible. You know, and I talk to these women every week until I made the move out there. And I'm grateful they picked up the phone. And they didn't laugh at me, you know. And, you know, I was just honest, because y'all have told me when I am honest with you and ask for help, you will help me. And that has been my experience. And we've been out in Idaho about 7 years, and it's kind of like God just opened up the fairy tale book, slammed both of us in it, and slammed it shut and said, had a good time. I mean, Wendell started off. Wendell started off making more money than what he was making down there after some time, you know. I had a little trouble finding a job, and I had a little trouble adjusting to the meetings because they do it different. They don't close with the Lord's Prayer. Their meetings are an hour and a half long, you know, and they talk funny. So I'm asking God to show me that I'm going to be okay in here, and it comes a little in my head. I'm just in Paris, and I'm driving on the wrong side of the road. I'm still in a car, but everything in it's different. Nothing is the same. You don't turn the same way. I mean, you don't roll the windows down the same way. Nothing. I mean, you're driving and you're in the car, but everything is different. And when I got that little vision, I become okay with my relationship in Pocatello, you know, and we just love it there. We just absolutely love it there. My mother got sick about 3 years ago, and she was going in a nursing home, and I talked to Wendell, and I said, you know, how about us inviting her out to live with us? He said, okay, if that's what you want to do. And I called my mom and I asked her, I said, why don't you come out here and live with her? She said, I can't do that. I said, well, okay. You know, think about it. So I called her back and she said, are you serious? Now, me and my mama have not lived under the same roof in 40 years. Well, probably 35 anyway. You know, and she knew who called her every week, but she didn't know who I really was. You know, and she was scared to come out because she wasn't quite sure what she was getting into. And you know what? She packed up her little sack and she come out to Idaho to live with us, and I was able to be a kind, loving daughter to that lady. You know, if I saw something I wanted her to have, I bought it for her. You know, she didn't have to cook, she didn't have to clean, she didn't have to do anything. I mean, we just enjoyed her being there, and I was able to give her. My mama worked hard all her life. Raising four of us by herself, it was not an easy journey. Her last 2.5 years on this earth was nice. We made it that way. And I'm going to tell you, I'm grateful for that opportunity. Because February this year, she died, you know. And, you know, when they're in a coma, you don't say, Mama, I wished I'd have said. I mean, you can say it, but that's probably a little late. You know, I sit there and I held her hand while she took her last breath, and there wasn't any, Mama, I wished I'd have done this for you. There wasn't any of this, Mama, I wished I'd have told you this. You know, I just sit there and I was at peace in my heart, and I know she wasn't hurting anymore because she'd been on oxygen a long time, and, you know, she was just sick. You know, and we were tired of seeing her suffer. When Wendell had his stroke and stuff like that, we were at the house, and in our home group brought a meeting to the house, and she was able to sit in on that. And she said after everybody left that she had never seen as much love in a church as she had in that room that night, and she just couldn't believe it. Thank you for making me a kind, loving daughter. Thank you for making me a woman. Thank you for giving me a life I have never, ever dreamed of. And thank you for being here this morning.